Reading from Mark chapter 5 and from verse 21. When Jesus had again crossed over by the boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered round him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came. When he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed round him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned round in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciple answered, "and yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha cum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Amen.
Well, we're going to turn to the passage that we read from. And I'd encourage you to keep the narrative open for reference. Desperation. It's the fear of losing all hope and willing to do anything in order to change the circumstances. Even as a wealthy nation today, we know that there's people in desperate situations of different kinds. We're in the middle of a financial crisis where people are really feeling the effects of increase in cost, and many are turning to food banks. And for some, this was unthinkable before. We know that mental health problems are on the rise, and drug misuse as well in our nation. These are huge, real-life issues today. Even in our own city, in Inverness alone, there are many people in Inverness tonight that are going through really difficult, dark times. They're in a dark place with no way out. And the point is this, that there are situations so desperate that they only resort to drastic action in order to change these circumstances. And when we come to our passage in Mark chapter 5, we meet two very different people who are facing life and death situation. These are people who represent two very different sides of society. We have one who's rich and one who's poor, one who's prominent and one who is an outcast. But despite their differences, their social differences, they both have the one same need, and that is they need the supernatural healing touch of Jesus. This Jesus is the one who has been revealed here as the fulfillment of the promises of God. He is the one who is a healer with power over death because of who he is. And it's Jesus in this passage that is identified as this Messiah. He is the Messiah, a king with a heart of mercy and love. So tonight I want us to consider this account from Mark's gospel. I want to look at it in two ways. We're going to look at we're going to look at the two main characters, a suffering woman first of all, and then we're going to look at a suffering man. We'll look at our first point then, a suffering woman. Now up until now, Jesus has been teaching about his kingdom, and people are aware of him. They're hearing all about him. They want to know, who is this Jesus of Nazareth? He's shown his teaching and his authority. He's reminding them, showing them who he is. And as we see in chapter 4, Jesus has the power over nature as he calms the storm. And at the beginning of chapter 5, Jesus shows his power over the forces of darkness as he heals this demon-possessed man. And that brings us to our passage that we're reading from, where he carries out this healing and this resurrection, which shows us that he is the one who has the power over sickness and death. Now he is the one who has now crossed over the lake, and he finds himself in Capernaum. And he's come and met a very different crowd from the one he has just left. The one that he just left, they couldn't wait to get rid of him. They were trying to push him away. But the one here, this vast crowd, they greet him with open arms. They're excited to hear all about him. They're excited to hear what he has to say and to see his healings. I wonder if I was to ask you tonight, what crowd are you part of tonight? I wonder what you would say. Are you part of the crowd who can't wait to meet Jesus, eager to see him? Or maybe you're part of the crowd who just wants to push him away, just wants to see the back of him. You might notice that as you read Mark's gospel, he's got a very, very funny way of writing, very strange style. At times, he writes in a sandwich-type motion, where he starts with a story and he finishes with that same story. And in the middle, filling if you like, he normally has some other story or teaching. And if you look through Mark's gospel, you'll see that on a few occasions. And then this is one of those occasions. And we're going to look at this middle part first that we come to in verse 25, which is the healing of this woman. What we know is that she is a sick woman. We don't know much about her. We don't know where she's from. But we're told that she is in a vast crowd of people that are literally pressing on Jesus in verse 23. They're all over Jesus. People were desperate to see him. They were desperate to hear him and to know more of him. And then we're told that she is in amongst this crowd of expectant people. Now what we do know about her is that she had some kind of bleeding issue. She had it for 12 years. And the condition that she had rendered her ceremonially unclean. And that caused huge impact on her. In fact, Old Testament law states that if she was unclean, that the only way she'd be cured from that, the only way she'd be free from that, is that if she was cured. She was separated from society. She was banned from worshiping with the people of Israel. And if that wasn't enough, her suffering, she was struggling with that. She had the shame, the stigma that was attached to that. She was in a difficult position. There wasn't any cure. She had tried different methods. She'd gone to different doctors. She'd exhausted all possibility. She'd tried to go through all different kinds of potions and things like that to no avail. She was lonely, she was suffering, and she was in a difficult position. And then in verse 27, we're told a little bit more about her. In fact, verse 26, she had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet, instead of getting better, she grew worse. She was in a really difficult position. The doctors had exhausted all possibilities. And financially, she had nothing left. She had nothing left to give. She was completely isolated. Her prognosis wasn't great. And she was getting worse. And it was leading to death. This was the situation she was in. It was a desperate situation. And the reality is that she had no hope and no option until, like everyone else, she heard about Jesus. And in desperation hope, she is in amongst this crowd of people eager to meet Jesus. Now, we can assume that she's heard about Jesus, and we can assume that she believed that he would heal her. So she has some kind of weak faith, the very fact that she was there. And this is her last option, but she's facing a dilemma. She's in a situation where she needs to get to Jesus, but he's in amongst this crowd of people who are all over them. They're pressing on him. They're on top of him. She needs to get to him. She was in a difficult situation. Now, I don't know if you've ever watched Indiana Jones, you know, that type of film, that adventure film. Well, quite often he faces a situation where if he's trying to get some kind of relic or some kind of artifact, he has to navigate through some kind of danger in order to get there, overcome some fear, one of which was spiders, in order to get the prize that he was looking for. And this woman, in a similar sense, is having to overcome her fears and her shame and her position in society in order to get to Jesus. And so it's worth us considering the question then tonight, are there any obstacles, are there any hurdles that are in our lives that cause us to just withdraw or not quite get to Jesus? And if you have some of these obstacles tonight, the question is, are you willing to overcome these obstacles? Are you willing to bypass that fear in order to get to Jesus? Because in Matthew 7, the promise of the word, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. And so we see that this woman, she knows she has to come from Jesus, but see how she does come to him. She comes to him from behind. She doesn't come in front of him, but behind. This is very much an indication of how she felt, of her position in society. She didn't want to be seen. She wanted to do this behind the scene and quietly. She did this likely because of the stigma that was attached to her. And like many in that culture as well, they had this superstitious belief that if they just touch something, that they will be healed. In some ways, we can relate to superstition. Superstition still exists today. People talk about karma and they talk about touching wood and things like that. Well, for them, this was real. They believed that if you touched an item of clothing, they believed that if you touched material like wood or stone, that they would be healed. And they were told that she was, in fact, healed instantly. But more than that, she was liberated. She was freed from her suffering. And it's at this point that Jesus is on his way in this other story to Jairus' house as he goes to heal this daughter. But he, notice this, he has to stop suddenly. He stops suddenly because he realizes that power has come out of him. He realizes that power has come out of him. And so he asks this almost bizarre question. He says, he turns around in the crowd and asks, who touched my clothes? And on the surface of it, it might appear strange. Because the fact is that there was lots of people around him. They were all swarming him. And probably lots of people were talking to him, but this was different. He knew that power had gone out of him. Even though the disciples, they couldn't grasp this, but he knew that strength had been taken from him. And so that's why he continually asks, who has touched me? And then this woman has no option as Jesus pursues the matter. She has to come out. And as she identifies herself, she confesses what she has done. But notice how Jesus deals with her. He deals with her tenderly. He doesn't deal with her harshly. He doesn't rebuke her. He doesn't ask her questions. He's tender. He uses this affectionate term. He calls her daughter, which there's no other record of this term being used by Jesus. Jesus shows his care and compassion for this woman in the way that he deals with her because he knows the position that she's come from. He knows that for a long time she's not been loved. She's been rejected. But he breaks the stigma and he shows his love for her. It's just like a parent, as they love and as they care for their children, so Jesus does the same thing to this woman, despite her weak faith. And that's like many of us, isn't it? In the beginning of our faith, we reach out and we stumble, but he touches us, and we love and we trust in him. He wanted to make her faith clear and strong, and that's why he stops her. That's why he asks the question. And in many ways, it shows us Jesus' humanity. But he wanted her to realize that it wasn't the clothing that healed her, but that the power comes from him. And because she trusted in him, because of her faith in him, she was healed. But he does more than that. He doesn't just heal her. He gives her this reassurance in verse 34. He says, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." This is only a peace that Jesus can give. One writer puts it like this: only faith saves us because only faith draws on the power of Jesus Christ as Savior. So this woman, she came for healing. Healing and liberation from her suffering. But she's also found grace. Jesus has authority then over sickness. But then we come to our next character, this suffering man called Jairus. And we see Jesus' continual mercy towards Jairus, the synagogue leader. Now, he was a very different man. He was very different on the social spectrum to this woman. He was suffering in a very different way. And he was a man who was responsible for the conduct and services. He was prominent, he was important, and he was likely a very wealthy man. But unlike this woman, he wasn't an outcast. But yet, like this woman, he had the same need. And he approaches Jesus because of his great need, not because of love or because of anything he can do, because of his great need. And so this man has to navigate through the same crowd of people. But notice that he comes towards Jesus. It maybe tells you his, maybe gives you an indication of his position. But this man, this well-respected man, he comes and he throws himself at the feet of Jesus. Verse 22, then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. Now, many of his colleagues, and probably even Jairus himself, disapproved of Jesus. He was a very threat to their way of life. And there was likely a disapproval there. Yet, in this desperate situation that he finds himself, he has no option. And so when it comes to choosing between his little girl or his friends, there's no other option to take than to plead and to risk controversy because he is desperate. Someone said that despair is commonly the prelude to grace, and that's true because at times God carries us through these trials and difficult periods and these dark times in our lives in order to make us realize our need for him and to allow us to grow in our faith. That is one of the markers of his love for his children. And so Jairus has no option but to humble himself before the master because he recognizes that Jesus is his only hope. There is no other way for him. Verse 23 tells us how he pleads. We're told that he has this pleading type language used, but actually the Greek uses a stronger language. It's more like begging. He's begging Jesus, which is ironic because isn't he the rich man, the well-off man? And it's the woman who's the outcast, the one who's struggling. Yeah, it's Jairus who has to beg to Jesus. That is the level of desperation he is at. He knows his daughter is dying and he knows that the death is imminent. Which leads us, I suppose, to the question, if we're going through difficult periods, if you're going through difficult periods, are you pleading with Jesus? Because notice what he does. Notice what he does in verse 24. The word, so Jesus went with him. He just goes with Jairus. He doesn't dispute it in any way. He doesn't say anything to the contrary. He doesn't ask any questions. He doesn't ask more about the girl. He just goes. This is Jesus who shows abundant compassion and love and mercy. This is the extent of his love for us. He doesn't question. He goes. Just as he did on the cross. And then it's at this point that Mark introduces the story of this woman with the blood issue, which caused her to become unclean. And as she comes into the scene, as we know, Jesus stops suddenly in order to deal with her. And probably to the disbelief of Jairus, you can imagine, he knows time's of the essence. His daughter's literally dying. And Jesus is stopping at that very moment to deal with another woman who maybe on the surface of it looks okay. He's probably thinking, what are you doing? He was at a low ebb. But Jesus uses this moment. He uses this as a lesson to teach Jairus because he's trying to show him who he is and he's trying to deal with the faith, the weak faith that Jairus had. If you're running late for something, you know it can be quite stressful. At home, it's often the case if we're trying to get to school or nursery, whatever it may be. Sometimes your children, if they're anything like mine, maybe it's just me, kids decide to throw themselves on the floor or they decide to go and play a game of hide and seek, literally the moment you're going. Not ideal, I can tell you that. Or maybe you find yourself in running late for a meeting or something and you're stuck in traffic and you see all the lights going and they continuously go and your light's still red and time's going and that's one level, but this is on another level for Jairus altogether. But yet Jesus calmly assures him. And as he healed this sick woman, the moment of realization was clear for Jairus as he finally could see who Jesus is. He physically could see it with his eyes, that he is the only one with the power to heal, that he is the Son of God. And it's his belief that Jesus could heal that probably to begin with was lightly wishful. And it would change again in a moment. It would be elevated at that moment, and then as he's informed by servants that his daughter has died, that news would have shattered his already weak faith. But what does Jesus do? Well, we see that he ignores the servant's message in order to deal with Jairus. He's telling him, death isn't stronger than me. Don't think death's stronger. And encourage him to hold on to Jesus. See, he's testing his imperfect faith. He's saying, don't just believe in me for a healing. Believe in me through a resurrection. It's a radical call of faith. Is that you tonight? Is Jesus radically, is he calling you to a radical transformation in your life? For Jairus it was. He was helpless and he had no other option but to fall at the knees of Jesus and recognize who Jesus is. He had no option but to trust in him through his situation. And that's what true faith means. But Jesus was encouraging Jairus in all this. He was encouraging Jairus to follow his example. to follow Abraham's example, who believed in the promises of God, of having a son despite his old age and despite Sarah's barrenness. And Paul tells us in Romans 4 that Abram trusted in God's promise. And he didn't let his thoughts or his circumstances or what he was thinking dictate otherwise. And what was the result? Yes, we know that the Bible tells us that he had a son. But more than that, he grew in his faith. And so Jesus, being the tender God that he is, he encourages Jairus again as he is greeted with these mourners. Now, likely they were professional mourners, as was the custom. They wouldn't have been family as such. And so Jesus rebukes these mourners and reassured Jairus that his daughter was sleeping and not dead. In verse 39, the child is not dead, but asleep. And then we read that they laughed. It's like a child who, or anyone for that matter, who has a really extreme fear, and you're having to walk them through a situation and continually remind them that it's okay and that you're with them in order that they can overcome that fear. And Jesus was doing the same thing. He was reminding Jairus again that despite death, this situation is temporary. It doesn't last. And he's inviting him to say, come and see my power over death. Just keep trusting in me. He is the one with the power over death. And in verse 40, we're told that with a touch and a command, this little girl is brought back to life. You see, Jesus shared in her death. He shared in her death to deliver her from it. So can you see now who Jesus is? That he is the Christ, that he is all-powerful, he is matchless. And the resurrection shows what he came to do. He came to destroy death, and the power of death. But we need to be clear about one thing, and that is that God doesn't always deliver us from these circumstances. But it reminds us that he holds the ultimate authority, and that we do not need to fear. Romans 8:37, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. And so this miraculous resurrection, it points us to the resurrection to come later on at Calvary, where Jesus would share again in death, this time for you and for I and for all his people. And he would become unclean in the same way that he touched this woman. And as he touched the dead girl, he would take our uncleanness. He would take on God's wrath, and he would take on God's judgment. This is a preview of the resurrection of the people of God. So what does all this mean then? What does all this mean for us tonight? Well, these stories of healing and resurrection shows how God brings faith into the lives of different kinds of people. It helps us know more of God's power. This sick woman represents all of us. That we're all unclean through God's eyes and through sin. And when we've exhausted every other possibility and every other hope of acceptance, we come to Jesus. We come to Jesus, who comes to us from the cross. We need his touch. We need to touch him by our faith. So if you haven't touched him tonight, then be encouraged. Do it. And be assured that he will respond. Someone said the only thing that we need to fear is letting him pass without reaching out to him in faith. I'll say that again. The only thing that we need to fear is letting him pass without reaching out to him in faith. If I was to ask you tonight if you had any regrets, I wonder what you would say. What would you say? Would you say that maybe it's you wish you'd spent more time with someone, or maybe you'd gone to a certain destination, or maybe if you're like me, you just wish I'd spent more time in the Word, or more time with God, more time speaking to God. Don't have regrets. If you haven't reached out to God in desperation, if you're there tonight, then do it now. Because if you don't, you will regret it. See how wide His love is. Because God didn't hold anything back. He didn't hold anything back for us. Romans 5:8, but God shows His love for us. And while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So it doesn't matter who you are tonight. It doesn't matter what struggles you have. It doesn't matter if you're an addict, if you're ill, if you're an outcast, if you're rich or well thought of. It doesn't matter, because Jesus invites you to come to Him, to experience His touch, and all He asks is just believe. Jairus is like many of us coming to Jesus. It wasn't His love, or it wasn't anything that we could do, but rather it was His great need for Jesus. It was His desperation and only His glimmer of hope that caused Him to come. And in, as imperfect and as weak as His faith was, that was enough for Jesus, and He just sets out with him without hesitation. So if all you have tonight is a weak faith, then give it to Him. Don't let it stop you. Don't let it be a hindrance to you. Take time to Him and pray to Him, because you'll reap the reward by feeling His touch on your life, and your faith will grow. But maybe tonight you just need to be reminded, as we all do, who Jesus is. We see Him as this great physician, the one who cares not just about the body, but about the soul. We see Him as the Father, as He carries us and as He speaks to us tenderly. But we also see Him as the Messiah on the cross, as He came to deliver us from death, to give us life. Ask Him, read your Bible, and ask Him to reveal Himself to you, and you'll be surprised. If you do, I can guarantee the only option will be your praise and your adoration of Him. When we truly understand the cross, then that should be our response tonight. But let me finish with an encouragement then. Jesus tells this little girl to arise. Read these words in verse 41. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around, and so on. That should encourage us today, because it points to our resurrection. Because one day the Lord will call us to arise. And when we see Him in all His tenderness and His beautiful nature, and we see Him in all His glory, what a day that will be as we open our eyes and the first thing that we see is His radiant, loving eyes of Christ. May we see Jesus then tonight for who He is, that He is the exalted Messiah, the one who has the power over disease, the one who has the power over death, over lost causes. And it's He who we trust in for all things and for all time. Amen.